Welcome back to the show. Jesse Agler alongside Mike Grace. Game two of this three-game series between the Padres and the Rockies is coming up live here from Petco Park, Colorado, doing a little batting practice out on the field. August 12th, 2014, that is today's date. 20 years ago, it was August 12th, 1994. I can do that math. And that was the start of the strike, the 1994 strike. 20 years ago tonight, the last game to finish up, I believe, was in Seattle, and then it was off, and everybody knows how it all played out. A lot of very interesting retrospective stuff around the internet and around TV today about it, and one of them was written by Tim Kuen of ESPN, the magazine, and ESPN.com, a really good in-depth look at 1994, what was and perhaps what could have been. Tim joins us now, which we appreciate. Tim, what is the biggest missed moment from 94? I think the two everybody brings up, you know, certainly here in San Diego, Tony Gwynn, you know, 394 average when the strike happened, but the Expos are obviously much discussed. For you, you know, as you're kind of looking back at it, writing at it, what's the main thing that we missed out on in 1994?
I think that it's probably the Expos. I think that they were, you know, the individual things are probably a little bit more hit or miss than the team things. And I think that because of what happened after 1994 with the Expos not being able to get a stadium and they lost all the momentum that they had gained toward getting a downtown ballpark in Montreal, which, you know, would have been a wonderful thing. I mean, obviously you guys know what a World Series appearance can do to sort of ignite the citizens toward approving a ballpark and getting a, you know, a great downtown ballpark like Petco. And I think so, just the reverberations from the Expos not getting to play out that season, being the best team in baseball and being a lot of fun. I mean, that team was young. It was, you know, I don't even know who to compare it to now, because in the last few years we probably haven't had a team. Maybe the 2010 Giants were a little bit like that, sort of unexpected and kind of all hitting their peak at the same time. But, you know, I personally think the Expos, what we lost in seeing that pennant race play out and the postseason play out, that is what sticks with me.
One of the most interesting things I found in your piece was kind of the different personalities of each of the three groups. You had Tony Gwynn with kind of a quiet confidence about him, and then the self-effacing and even pessimistic Matt Williams, and then kind of the young, cocky Expos. I found that really interesting, just the juxtaposition of all the different things going on with those big chases.
Yeah, well, thank you. We kind of narrowed it down to those three because they were, you know, we could have gone in any number of different directions and made it sort of comprehensive, but, you know, Jeff Bagwell could have been a triple crown year for him. We had Griffey, Frank Thomas, Bonds was having a great year. The White Sox were really good. You know, there were a ton of stories that year, but I think that, you know, the way it played out, and I covered the Giants back in the early 90s, including the first half of the 94 season. So I saw Tony Gwynn a ton, and I knew Matt Williams from way back, and I kind of expected that his approach would be exactly what it was, which was, you know, who me? You know, did anyone expect me to hit 62 homers? It was, you know, so I think it was a good mix of different stories. You know, you could take any season. Heck, if this season stops right now in 20 years, we'd be writing about the Royals, right? You know, the Royals team that got everything stopped while they were in first place. So, yeah, I think it was a unique mix. I mean, there were some pretty, as we're seeing with the Hall of Fame voting over the last few years, this is a pretty elite group of players playing in the mid-90s.
Tim Kuen is a senior writer for ESPN, the magazine, ESPN.com, wrote today about the strike of 1994. Do you find it incredible how many people think Tony Gwynn would have hit 400 in 1994 had the season not, you know, come to a premature close?
You know, it's almost unanimous, and I keep having to go back. You know, when I was talking to people, and I'd say, you know, he kind of had a ways to go. You know, he was at 394. It wasn't like he was at 406 or even 399. You know, he did have, but everybody just feels that the way he was playing that year, and the way he was swinging the bat, that he would have found a way to do it, that he had it in his sights, that he was so locked in that he going to do it. And I, you know, it's funny because I talked to several people and they're from different walks of life, you know, doing different things now and had different jobs at the time, whether they were a teammate or a coach of Tony's. Everybody feels the same way. You know, obviously a lot of that is sort of colored by the fact that everybody loved Tony and it was tragic what happened to him, and the fact that everybody really wishes he could have done it because it would have capped a career that was phenomenal to begin with. And such a, you know, as someone who covered baseball in the early 90s, I, like everyone else, just thought the world of Tony Gwynn with the way he treated people and the way that he conducted himself. So, you know, there is some sentiment at work, I think, but that's okay. You know, we're allowed that right now.
Kind of a, I'm sure it was an interesting process for you. Of all the people you spoke to about this from the different organizations and ball players, who do you feel like kind of just had the most bummer of an experience out of it? Like, just really thought, oh my God, we really missed out on what could have been. Who was the guy that just really couldn't live it down?
Well, I think that, you know, there's some of those young players. Sean Berry for the Expos was very good. Darren Fletcher also, very sort of, you know, introspective and thoughtful about the fact that, you know, they didn't get another, they didn't, that was their chance, you know, that the ball player's life is pretty short. And if you don't, you know, you get to the point where you feel like you can make a run for it and sort of get that one milestone for your career, that World Series championship, or even an appearance, you know. I think those guys feel cheated the most, that maybe the guys that didn't go on to have fantastic careers like Larry Walker or Pedro Martinez, you know, they do feel a little bit cheated. And what I found kind of surprising, especially after, you know, as you look at what took place after the All-Star break, was just how, and I know we all felt it was an inevitability that the season was going to stop at some point. But the fact that they felt like after the All-Star break, it really wasn't fun. You know, a lot of even the Expos, they won 20 of 23 games to end the season. And they still talk about how it was kind of a downer, that there was this pall over the season. And I found that to be, that was kind of sad too. I mean, here they were doing something spectacular and they really couldn't even enjoy it at the time.
Reminiscing about the strike of 1994, which began 20 years ago tonight. Tim Kuehn of ESPN.com, ESPN the magazine. He's on Twitter at Tim Kuehn, ESPN. One last for you, and appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about your article, which was outstanding. And I hope everybody checks it out. Obviously pretty heavy on the Tony Gwynn part of it. But what's the big lesson you think coming out of 1994 for baseball, and not just the owners, not just the players, but for baseball as a whole?
I think that the message was, number one, we better not let this happen again, because it took a long time to regain people's trust and interest in the game, and some people never came back. You know, I think that's a big part of it. I think there's also that what came out of it was profit sharing, and you look at today's standings. You know, you look at the fact that the Royals, A's, you know, that these teams that aren't necessarily the biggest market, that they're more competitive now, and that's all an offshoot of what happened that came out of that strike and work stoppage. That changes were made. The game, I think, there was a lot of short term pain, but over the long term, I think they probably found a way to you know, better divvy up the profits and make the game a little bit more interesting for all those places, you know, like Montreal. You know, Montreal was one of those towns that you know, the guys, once they got old enough to make some money, they were gone, you know. And now there's a little bit more of a chance for those smaller market teams to not only compete but hold on to their players.
Good stuff. Tim Kuehn, ESPN the magazine, ESPN.com, wrote today about the strike of 1994, looking back at what was and what could have been. Tim, really appreciate the time this evening, and great work on the story. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
There you go. Tim Kuehn, ESPN.com. Heavy subject, but a really, really significant moment, and it was more than just a moment, obviously, in baseball history.
But good to reflect back on and make sure it doesn't happen again. Every time there's labor unrest, you think
think about the Expos. Think about Tony.
The worst
thing
about
that can
happen.
It's absolutely it.